Amy and Christina, two moms who learned the hard way that there's a lot we wish we knew about pregnancy and parenting.
So now we're asking experts all the questions, sharing what we've learned and what we're still figuring out, and keeping it real along the way. Welcome to What I Wish I Knew.
Lauren Mackler's story could literally be a Lifetime movie. She's out there living the corporate dream, dating a great guy, then is diagnosed with an incredibly rare disease, told she may never be able to bear children, has an angelic sister who donates her own eggs to Lauren, and then through a total chance encounter via Instagram DMs, is inspired to co-found a company that's changing the future of fertility.
We don't want to give too much away, but like any good Lifetime movie, Lauren's fertility journey does have a happy ending. And we know you'll love hearing her perspective on planning for a family on your own terms and your own timeline.
Thanks for spending your Friday with us.
I'm excited.
Yes, welcome to What I Wish I Knew. We're here for it.
What I Wish I Knew. Or is it better that I didn't know? You know?
Is ignorance bliss? Sometimes yes.
Yeah.
Agree with that. I agree. Well, Lauren, we do not shy away from the personal here on this podcast. So if it's okay with you, we're just going to dive in. And what better place to start than talking about your personal fertility journey? Let's talk about that. Yeah. So we want to focus on, you know, what led you to co-fertility.
Totally. Well, first, like, thanks for having me, one. And two, I think thanks for starting and doing this. I think that it's really needed for so many of us, like the willingness to have the conversations that people don't have. And so I love that. And so I want to start there. And at co-fertility, I think we do it a lot. Like, we have the conversations that people aren't used to having, and we like kind of come at it head on and hopefully make it a little bit more approachable and like more easily something that people can do. And so that's something that's important to us. But at our core, we help women freeze their eggs for free when they donate half of the eggs retrieved to intended parents that can't otherwise conceive. And so we are essentially making egg freezing more accessible and making egg donation less transactional at the same time. And this was absolutely inspired by my personal fertility journey and that of my incredible co-founder, Hallie. We say we've had very winding roads to becoming moms where we can help other people, it like feels good. So my story is one that I was an early employee at Uber and had moved to San Francisco after a number of years on the East Coast and had just pitched our executive leadership team on the healthcare arm of Uber, which is called Uber Health, when I became a patient myself. I woke up one morning with a pain in my side and knew something wasn't right and pushed for testing. And I found that I had an incredibly rare abdominal disease, one of 154 people on the planet to ever get it. And I had masses growing everywhere throughout my abdomen and pelvis. And I should have been asking my doctors, like, how will I live with this disease? Or like, what are my options here? And instead, the first and like only question I could ask was like, will I be a mom someday? And I think I just like always wanted to be a mom. And so like, I was just assuming I'd be fine, or maybe I was in denial. I don't know. And the doctor actually said to me, maybe you'll be a unicorn. I was like, oh, wow, this is bad. This is really bad. Like, she's, yeah. And so I found specialists who knew more about the disease over time and learned that I'd have to have a number of surgeries to remove the disease. And they said there was a really good chance I would lose my ovaries in the process. And I didn't love that idea. Basically, well, can I freeze my eggs? Or like, what are my options? And they said, you know what? Your disease is so rare. Like, you know, we're not really game for that right now. Like, let's see what happens with these surgeries. And so I said, well, like, what would my options be if I want to be a mom? And they were like, well, egg donation would probably be your best bet, given, you know, you need ovaries to have eggs. And so I started looking at everything I could about egg donation. I wasn't ready to have a kid, but I wanted to know everything about it. And so I started researching, and I could not believe what I saw. I like could not believe how transactional it was. This idea that if you want a donor who has like the same heritage as you or a similar education or maybe looks a certain like you, right? Like that, depending on how hard it is to find, the cash compensation that is paid to that donor maybe starts around $10,000, but goes up and up and up depending on how specific you get with what you're looking for.
That's crazy, right?
Like I, as an Uber employee, I was like, well, that is straight up surge pricing for egg donors.
Right.
Like, what? Like, which I can get behind for a ride. Like it's raining and I need a ride. Like I get it. But surge pricing for something this important and this personal felt unethical to me. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was crazy that these donors were billed as anonymous. It's like, this was 2017. It was like the height of 23andMe and Ancestry.com. And I'm like, if I can easily figure out who my DNA relatives are today, imagine a donor conceived child 18, 20 years from now, how easy it will be to figure out who they're related to. No donation can truly be anonymous. Like that is a lie. And so I just felt like the ick completely and utterly over all things egg donation at the time. And I have the best big sister ever. And she was right there with me through a lot of this, right? Like she flew from LA to San Francisco to be with me at my doctor's appointments and really just supported me through this whole process. And she said to me, look, Lauren, I am gonna freeze my eggs and donate them to you. And I was like, what? Like, that's such a big thing. Like, what are you, no, like, she was like, and I'll never forget this. She said, I would give my left arm if it meant that you could be a mom someday. And my sister's a lefty. So like, that was a big deal. That was a big deal.
That means something.
Yeah. And so that's
a star for Lauren's sister.
Stephanie.
Like actual tears are welling up.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That is so
She's the best. Just, you know, that's what she did. She went through an egg retrieval and we did the whole thing with the psych eval and the contracts and all that. And she donated them to me so that going into these surgeries, I had those eggs waiting for me on ice should I need them. And so it gave me peace of mind that if I woke up with no ovaries, they would be there.
Sure.
Long story short, I ended up having 3 major surgeries and I somehow did not lose my ovaries, which is like still a total miracle that I cannot believe.
Unicorn.
Yeah.
You unicorned it.
Wow.
You are a unicorn.
Turns out that even after that, they didn't know, just given the whole thing, like would I be able to conceive, right? And long story short, really, the doctor said, try for 6 months. If you're not pregnant after 6 months, we'll talk about using your sister's eggs. And on the 6th month, I conceived my daughter, Eden. And now I wear a unicorn ring. That was my push present. Because I like really feel that way, right? Like this is like a total miracle. And I'll say even before we went through the path of like trying to get pregnant, I had the gift of frozen eggs, right? Like I had this ability to live my life and make decisions about my relationship without the pressure of my biological clock, right? Like I could make decisions about my career without the pressure of my biological clock. And so finally, when I like held this baby in my arms, I thought, gosh, I have to build something in this space. Mm-hmm. And so the craziest thing happened. I gave notice at Uber after my maternity leave. I did not have a plan, which was hard for me. But I think the letting go of that is what allowed this all to happen. Hallie, my co-founder, DM'd me on Instagram. We knew each other sort of peripherally through the like digital health space. And she was like, I have an idea. And she didn't even know that my sister had donated eggs to me.
Really?
I swear to God, it's wow. the craziest thing. She said, I've been sitting on this idea since 2015 and the timing was never right. The experimental label of egg freezing was only lifted in 2012, right? And the amount of growth that has happened since, it's like skyrocketed. But the biggest barrier is still cost, right? We always say the best time to freeze your eggs is when you can least afford it, right? The younger
For context, like how much you mentioned earlier, like 10,000 and it goes up. Like if you were to just go out.
So that's cash compensation to donate eggs.
Oh, right? Okay. So just so if you wanted to freeze your eggs today, like
on average in the US to do it, like just on your own is $15,000 to $20,000. Yeah. Right,
'cause every 25-year-old has that laying around. Yeah.
Right? Exactly. And so the people who are able to benefit from it the most, right? The younger you are, the greater your egg quality and the greater your egg quantity, right? And so we'd all benefit from doing it when we're as young as possible so that we can preserve them at the best moment in time. The problem is by the time people can afford it, they're well into their 30s and they don't have the same outcome. And so we really wanted to make it more accessible to people at the age in which they would benefit from it the most, right? And so we felt really strongly about that on one side, right? Like Hallie always says, like, I did a lot of cool things in my 20s. My biggest regret is that egg freezing wasn't one of them. And, you know, it's just not fair to expect women in their 20s to be able to afford this, right?
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's not even a conversation that's brought up. Nobody in their 20s is thinking about freezing eggs because nobody's thinking that far ahead, really.
They are now. So get
they are.
So get this. I think I'm going to give ourselves a pat on the back. I think millennials and Gen X have done a far better job of any generation before us about talking about our challenges with fertility. Right? So talking about miscarriage used to be incredibly taboo. Now we have people, celebrities, influencers, people are open and honest about it on social media. They're open and honest about it in interviews. They are sharing it more broadly. The same goes for, hey, this we did IVF and we had this baby, or we are members of the LGBTQ community and we had a hard time getting pregnant and, you know, we had to use third-party reproduction. People are talking about it, right? And so there was a study done, I think it was just last year, that said 3 in 5 Gen Z women are already concerned about their fertility. And so I think that I truly attribute that to the millennials and Gen Xers that are out here talking about it. Mm-hmm. And so they are thinking about it. And exactly, go us, right? And if you look like, you know, egg freezing talk and, you know, it is a very popular trending topic among this age group, the number one barrier is cost.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, it's insane. So your co-founder had this idea, had this idea for a long time, and then Kismet, like, connected with you, didn't know your story, but was like, oh, actually, like, I feel really passionate about this. Started talking to you. You were like, I feel really passionate about this. And then
I wanted to be sure that people would actually do it before, like, going all in. And so, and this should tell you something too. I am very data driven. And so we set up like a survey, right? Like we built a type form to like ask women about their feelings around egg freezing, their interest in egg freezing, how much they knew about it, what were the barriers to doing it, and if they would be interested in a split program. And we had a few influencers that we know posted on Instagram, and within 24 hours, we had about close to 1,000 women reply. And 66% of them said yes or definitely yes to being interested in the split program where you don't need half of the eggs retrieved to do it for free. And I am telling you, I thought the type form was broken. I kept refreshing it, I swear, because I was like, there's no way. Oh my God. And like, that was the day I said, Hallie, like, let's go. Like, let's do this. And we have not looked back.
That was your eureka moment, the initial eureka moment.
Yeah, it's seriously. Like, I believe it could work, but like the data told me yes.
Yes. And tell, for those who don't know about the split program, can you explain what that means?
Yeah, so essentially for women between the ages of 21 and 34, which are the age guidelines set forth by ASRM, the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, that is like the eligible age to become an egg donor. Essentially, you can apply to our split program and have the opportunity to freeze your eggs for free, store them for free for up to 10 years, because storage is the part that gets you.
So expensive.
And then, like, when you donate, half of the eggs retrieved. And so we are, like, seeing this happen and come to fruition. And we have intended parents who maybe have struggled with years of fertility challenges or have had years of failed IVF treatments, or same-sex male couples who have always wanted to have a baby and knew that they would need the help of a third party to do that. We are making matches between our split members, as we call them, and intended parents every day. And it's the absolute best feeling in the world. And now we're seeing babies born, and we're seeing these women put eggs away and like be able to go live their life on their own terms.
Yeah, which is amazing, because I think there was a stat that came out just a little bit ago that more women are having babies in their 40s than there are teen moms now, which is a huge statistic and a huge also driver, I think, for egg freezing.
It is a driver for egg. It is like both related to egg freezing and egg donation, right? Like the so many of the women in their 40s who are having a baby are doing so with the help of an egg donor, or they're doing it with their own frozen eggs from when they were younger, right? Amazing.
I thought I saw also, like, while we're talking stats, like, I thought I saw that this year we are at the highest average first-time pregnancy age, like, of all time. Mm-hmm. Like, meaning, like, people are having their first pregnancies later in life. But that number, I'm pretty sure, isn't it, like, 27 or something? So it's still super.
I think it's 30.
That's another crazy statistic of, like.
People are waiting to have babies until later in life. And that is a trend that has gotten older and older and older over the past several years, and like isn't going to miraculously reverse, especially not for like a $5,000 bonus or whatever they're considering, right? Like, that's another topic for another day. But like, yes, people are prioritizing their careers. They're prioritizing education. They're prioritizing travel. And we ask that question of our members, like, what is the driving factor for you wanting to freeze your eggs? And often it is the pursuit of all of those things, right? It's like, I have other things I want to do in my life first. It doesn't mean I don't want to become a parent someday. It just means that I have other things that I want to do first, right? They're planning and they're thinking about their life goals and their family planning goals. And I think, you know, something else that more people don't consider is this growing trend we're seeing called secondary infertility, right? Which is the idea that getting and staying pregnant with a subsequent pregnancy, so not your first child, but maybe your second or third, is harder than it was the first time. And that happened to me. So I had my first beautiful baby in 2021, and then had a much harder time getting and staying pregnant for baby number two, and ended up doing IVF for my second, who will be one soon. But people don't realize that like that happens. I think we're sort of programmed to think like, oh, I didn't have any trouble getting pregnant with my first, and so I'm just not someone who struggles with infertility, so we'll be fine. And I think there's like, that may be the case for a lot of people, right? But I think there's a false sense of security there. I think that part of it is that we get older, right? Like you have the whole, you know, length of a pregnancy, and then you have a length of a postpartum experience, and then you may wait a little bit before having another child. And at that point, your ovarian reserve has decreased, your egg quality has decreased, and it can be harder. And your partner has gotten older too, and maybe that impacts sperm quality. And so being thoughtful about planning ahead and thinking through what your goals are of how many kids you want to have is an important part of this too.
I think that's such, I think it is a very common myth that we can just bust right now around freezing your eggs that I do think maybe prior to our generation or even several years ago, egg freezing was seen just as an option if something went wrong, like not a proactive, but a reactive, like, oh, I'm going to have to go through cancer treatments or something's going to happen, you know, or something has already happened and I need to try to salvage the situation.
I hate this word, but like, or you're a spinster, right? Like
you're a spinster,
right? Like, oh, you're in your late 30s and you're not married or you're in your late 30s and you don't have a partner. Like, maybe you should freeze your eggs. Like it was like a whispered secret. And then people would like whisper secret, go do it and not tell anyone they were doing it. That's not the vibe anymore. Like I'm telling you, it is like we had, like I actually have a friend who threw herself an egg shower, like right before her like process kicked off. She had all of her friends over for like a brunch. She was like, I'm not having a baby anytime soon, but like, let's celebrate. And it was like, she wanted to take like a month off of drinking before she did her cycle. And so she was like the last day she like had, you know, like went for it and had the best time. It is a thing that you can be open and celebrate. And I think that's part of what CoFertility aims to do, which is like, we're connecting women who are going through it at the same time. We have a community that they're a part of, and it doesn't have to be lonely or isolating to go through it, because there is zero shame in being like, yeah, I want to have kids someday, maybe, but not right now. And so I'm doing something about it. Like, there is nothing shameful about that. And I think people are like out here giving themselves injections on TikTok and on Instagram. And they're like, how cool is this? Like, look what look at this empowering thing I get to do for my future.
And I think, in terms of like normalizing it, or like it's normalizing itself, I kind of think, but also with everyone talking about it and helping to normalize why it's a good idea and how great it is for all these reasons, I also feel like you guys are removing one of the barriers, or working to remove one of the barriers that makes it hard to begin with. So it's like, even if you thought it was, or you were interested, or someone else did it, but you're just like, it's, I don't know, I can't afford it, or it seems really complicated, or I have the ick factor. You've talked about that. Like, I don't know, like, well, here's an option for you. Like, this is a path forward. It's just lowering barriers, access to healthcare and access to things that are affordable and transparent.
It's an option. And that's something that like we believe in our like DNA at CoFertility, which is like, look, egg donation is not for everybody. It's not for everyone to want to become an egg donor or to use donor eggs. And that's okay. Right. And we actually have a program we call Keep, which is for women who either aren't interested in egg donation or maybe don't clinically qualify to donate eggs, where we'll still help them find a way to freeze their eggs. It is self-pay, but we've negotiated other like benefits and discounts that our members can take advantage of. And so we're helping to like lower the cost where they can keep 100% of the eggs for themselves. But I would never want someone to feel pressured or, you know, like they had to do it. But it, for some people, is such a great option. And they are like honored that they get to like help someone else have a baby. And so for some people, it is a perfect path. And for others, it's not. And that's totally cool. Like, options are everything, and we need more of them.
Yep. Can we talk about the difference between an egg and an embryo? Because I think one of the myths, I think another like myth around it is there's a huge and important difference between an egg and an embryo, especially when it comes to like talking about the ethics of reproduction and all of this. So
an embryo is when a woman's egg and a partner sperm or donor sperm are fertilized and grow to become a like actual embryo that then can become a fetus and grow into a baby, right? And so that is where if you have a child with your partner and you have leftover embryos, right? Like your child and those embryos would be 100% biological siblings, right? Like that is something to consider. Some people donate leftover embryos, which is amazing. And they are comfortable with the idea that someone else may be raising the biological siblings of their children or sibling. And that is like, again, a wonderful option for those people, right? And then there are other people who maybe don't feel comfortable with that and choose to maybe dispose of their leftover embryos or donate them to science, right? And that's, again, options are everything. With eggs, right, these eggs are not fertilized, right? And so you are contributing the, like, half of the DNA of the child, right? And so, yes, your future children would be biological half-siblings with these children, but they're not full siblings, right? And so they would then be fertilized with the sperm of the intended parents, mm-hmm. or if the intended parents had donor sperm, depending on their scenario. And so it is a really important and distinct difference. We also get questions from a lot of our members who are interested in going through the egg freezing process of, like, should I fertilize these eggs with my partner and freeze embryos, or should I just freeze eggs? We get that question a lot.
That's a good question.
And you may have seen, like, over the years, there have been, like, really well publicized, like, legal battles, right? Where maybe a couple freezes embryos together and then they get a divorce. And then it's like, who gets the embryos in the divorce, right?
Right.
And if they had just frozen eggs, those eggs would belong to the woman whose eggs they were, right? So there's less question about it. But when they're fertilized, they both have contributed 50% of the genetic tissue involved. And so then it becomes a custody issue over the embryos, similar to custody over children, right?
Oh my God.
And so a lot of times the best option is like, oh,
a disaster.
They end up disposing of them because they didn't want to have a child together in the first place. But it becomes problematic when one person wants those embryos to become children, but the other person doesn't, right? And so we really encourage our members to be thoughtful about what might happen down the line, right? And we say only create embryos with someone that you are absolutely sure you are open to having children with in the future, right? You know, how comfortable are you in this relationship that you're in? You know, we've had people who end up creating some embryos and saving some eggs, right? Like, people, you know, there's a lot of different options, but really it's about how, you know, comfortable and sure are you of the relationship that you're in or of the situation that you're in. Some people fertilize with donor sperm because they're ready. You know, it just depends on your circumstance, but that's a really big topic that we get into a lot with our members. We have a lot of content on our site about that. So it's really important that anyone who's considering egg donation, as part of the process, they go through a psychological evaluation to make sure that they understand what it means to donate eggs and the long-term implications of doing so. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think one of the biggest stigmas around donating eggs is this idea that you could be walking down the street one day and see someone who looks like you and wonder, like, is that the person, you know, that was born from that egg donation? And I think that's a thing of the past or of status quo donation, like this idea that you never know where your eggs go. At Fertility, we offer intended parents and donors the opportunity to meet one another and to have what's called a disclosed donation, where they have one another's contact information and maybe decide that they want to, you know, exchange emails or have a Zoom once a year or send photos or something like that. So it's not like a black box of where your eggs go. We also have what we call a mutual match process, where the donor has to say, yes, this is who I want to donate my eggs to. Right? Like, they should feel really comfortable and bought in on the scenario, not I'm just signing away my eggs for, you know, 15, 20 or 100 grand to donate these eggs and I have no idea where they're going and I'll never know. Like, that's something that, like, we're uncomfortable with. Again, that works for some people and that's totally fine, but it's, like, not how we operate. And so I think the, like, psychological part of that is really eased when you know where your eggs are going. And then on the intended parent side, I think we see people, it really depends on why you need donor eggs, right? I think the feelings around it are very different for two hopeful gay dads, right? Compared to, a woman who has, like, gone through, you know, several miscarriages or several failed rounds of IVF, right? Mm-hmm. In that case, she's probably going through a process of grieving her genetics, right? And has to like get through that. And we have a fertility psychologist on our medical advisory board who does a lot of work with intended parents in that scenario. We try to meet them where they are, right? I think that a lot of times they're in a situation where they're like parallel processing a lot of this, right? Where it's like they're going through the emotions of it while also moving the ball forward of having a baby at the same time. And so we like, I don't know, we have to like hold them through that, right? And we have a member advocate team who is really experienced and just like good at being able to offer support during that.
Well, it's wild because like, yeah, you need to, however you got to the place where you were, I mean, you have to process all that, but also like kind of time is of the essence if you're already at that point. So it's like, you don't want to rush them and be like, yeah, yeah, no, I know you're like super sad that you haven't been able to get pregnant yourself, but like TikTok here. Exactly.
That's how they feel. Yeah. It is really shitty to be in that position. And I think that like, I don't know, we just try to be like honest and understanding about that, right? Like we know it's hard to feel like you have to like rush and like these, they wanted a baby yesterday, you know? Yeah. And we also say, look, like I literally will get on a call with an intended parent and be like, I know you never wanted to meet me. Like you are not excited about this Zoom call. Like I'm the last person you want to talk to, but I would love for you to not feel like you're settling. Like, I'm not saying you're ever going to be excited about this, but I don't want you to feel like you had to choose the least of all evils. Like, yeah. I want you to feel values aligned and ethically aligned and supported in what wasn't your first choice. And so we talk a lot about that of like, how do we flip the script on something that has traditionally felt like stigmatized and shameful, right? Like we're out here talking, like egg donation does not need to be taboo. Like it doesn't need to be a secret, right? Like there is no path to parenthood should ever feel shameful or like something you need to hide. Right. And so that's something that my team and I are trying to change.
Well, there are a million paths. We talked about this a little bit, but like, tell us more about like who actually uses co-fertility, like all walks of life, all different reasons. Like I feel like it spans the gamut more than one would think on the offset of just being like, oh, it's the spinsters and the people who have like, medical diagnoses.
Yeah. So let's talk about it on each side, right? So on the side of someone who's interested in egg freezing, I mean, we have, I think, first of all, our split members are, I think 50% of them identify as women of color, right? Like they are like from all backgrounds and all like career paths and interests and talents. And like, so honestly, they're so amazing. These women that I often am like, I feel bad about my own accomplishments. Are they, like they're amazing. Like just like they do volunteer work or they're Rhodes scholars or they're just like really just well-rounded, interesting women who have come to us because maybe they're in med school and they know that they're going to be in training and all these things and that they're not going to be able to have their first baby until they're 36 and they want to have three kids, right? Like that is a very common scenario. Or maybe someone who had a sibling who, you know, used an egg donor because they're in a same-sex male couple and they're like, I want to give that to somebody else, right? Like they have different reasons for coming to us on that side. And it's pretty, like, I love reading their applications and profiles because it's like, wow, like they're very cool. And then on the intended parent side, truly, it could be like, even in the last week alone, like I know we have an intended parent who she's like at 26 went through early menopause, right? Like that is something that happens, right? It's absolutely wild. And she, you know, had to share that with her boyfriend who became her husband really early on and went on to have, you know, realize that like, if we're going to have kids, this is going to be the path that we have to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. Then you have, you know, a couple that I'm thinking of who's in their late 40s and came to us and said, we met later in life. Neither of us ever thought we'd like find this kind of love or this kind of partnership in someone. And We both have always dreamt of having a baby, and we know that we need the help of an egg donor to do that. And so they like knew that using her eggs was never going to be an option based on her age. And so they didn't even try IVF, right? Mm-hmm. In other scenarios, like IVF does not work for everybody, right? And this is oftentimes after someone has had, you know, maybe two or three, depending on the outcomes, and maybe more, several failed rounds of IVF, they say, okay, egg donation is your next option. Yeah. And so they will create embryos with the intended parent sperm, and they will then create those embryos, and they'll do a transfer into the intended mother, right? And then she will carry that pregnancy. In other cases, they have to use a surrogate depending on what those options look like, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have single dads by choice. We have some single moms by choice who, by the time they decided they were ready to have a baby, couldn't use their own eggs. Mm-hmm. We have a ton of same-sex male couples who I think are especially excited about co-fertility because our donors are really open-minded about having a disclosed relationship where they can be in touch over the years. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be really important to that community. So
yeah,
a lot of different people who come to us.
So many different people. And also, like, I just feel like reproductive education from what we got in public schools was like definitely not enough.
All it was like how to not get pregnant, right?
Right.
No one ever taught us how to get pregnant when we'd be ready for that, right? So it's like, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant, don't get pregnant. And then suddenly you're like, okay, I'm ready. And you're like, what is ovulation, right? Like, what? Like,
right. This is so hard. It is so hard to get pregnant. Like, literally, I hate to be hippy-dippy, but it's like, it is magical that someone can get pregnant because it has to happen at the precise, it's like an avocado. You know, it's like, it's not ready, it's not ready, it's not ready. And then suddenly it's ready for like 13 minutes. And if you don't eat it in that 13 minutes, like it's gone.
It's brown.
Yeah. No, you're so, I've never heard it compared to an avocado, but it's so right. You're so right. It is insanely hard to get pregnant. And it gets harder as you get older. And that's the mm-hmm. trend. Like, that's what, like, we feel like very empowered in our lives to do what we want, right? Like to go out and like make choices about our career or about our partner or where we want to live. And like, I love seeing young women like feel that way. And then there's this thing that's like entirely out of our control.
And even sometimes when it works perfectly the first time, like I want to go back to the secondary infertility, let's just add a layer of complexity.
Yeah.
Not only can you maybe not get pregnant when you want to the first time, but even if you do the first time, then, oh, it's not always the same after that. Like,
no.
I mean, whoever talks about that? Whoever learns about that at any point in their lives until it's happening to them or someone that they love? I mean, honestly.
Yeah. More of us need to talk about it. So I'm out here like shouting from the rooftops about secondary infertility. I also hate the word infertility.
Let's talk about that. Because that came up, I think, in our earlier conversation.
Yeah. I feel so infertility as a word is it's actually to like it's a diagnosis, right? And it is used if you are under 35. And you have been trying to get pregnant unassisted. And I use the word unassisted because I feel like all pregnancy is like a natural thing, right? Like it's a miracle, totally, even if you had help to get there. But like if you are trying to get pregnant unassisted, so like timed intercourse for 12 months and you're under 35, they will give you a diagnosis of infertility. And that diagnosis may, but depending on your insurance coverage, like may open you up to more options in terms of like coverage for assistance getting pregnant, whether that's IUI or IVF or other things like that. If you're over 35, timed intercourse, unassisted, trying to get pregnant for 6 months gets you the infertility diagnosis. However, I think like the word infertile, to me at least, feels very like definite. It's like, you cannot have a baby if you are infertile, right?
Right.
So to give people a diagnosis of infertility, like, I think, like, mentally prepares you for not being able to have a baby. Like, you're infertile now.
And your, like, womb is done. Cobwebs.
Yeah. But, like, so many people are able to successfully get pregnant after that, right? And so I just hate that word. And so I try as much as I can, and, like, my team tries. Like, let's talk about what it is. Like, you have had challenges or struggles with your fertility for that period of time. And so, I just don't like how finite that word is. So that's like a personal, like, thing that I really just can't stand. Like, let's do away
with it. Let's mix that. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
What is something that you wish you knew going into this that you could maybe share with everybody else?
I wish I knew that I should remain focused on the outcome and more flexible on the journey.
Isn't that an analogy for life? Wow.
Totally. But especially as it relates to having babies.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that's just sort of like, how do we open ourselves up to what possibilities? And I actually feel the same way about, like, for starting a company, I always say, like, don't fall in love with the solution you're trying to bring to bear. Fall in love with the problem you're trying to solve, right? Like, and I feel that way about having a baby too, right? Like, I'm trying to solve this problem of having a baby. Like, who knows how we're going to get there, right? It may be timed intercourse. And if it is, great. That is, like, the most fun way of having a baby. The cheapest way, the most fun way. Like, great. But for some people, that's not going to do it, right? And that's okay. And so we may need to start, like, you know, tracking our ovulation or our temperature. Oh, that's not going to work. Maybe medication will help. Or maybe IUI will help. Oh, IVF, like, I had to give myself a lot of shots to have the baby that's sleeping upstairs, right? And we got lucky. And in some cases, it's going to be donor eggs. And in other cases, it's going to be, it's going to potentially be a surrogate, or it's going to be donor sperm too, right? And I think, like, just being flexible on the journey is something that I got there eventually, but I wish that I had started there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you wish that people knew about, I know this is going to be, like, hard because this is what you spend all of your time doing, but about egg freezing? I feel like one thing you probably would say is, like, it's not taboo. I wish you knew that it was okay to talk about this or to do it or think whatever you want. But around egg freezing in general, like, advice to people, like, what would you say?
I would say that if you are someone who, even if you already have your first child or your second, and you're like, do I want another baby someday? Or do I want to have babies someday and I'm not ready? Like, look into it, right? Mm-hmm. Understand your baseline. And we do this with our members. They get an AMH test that helps you understand your ovarian reserve. They get an antral follicle count through an ultrasound that helps us to understand what sort of outcome you might have if you do an egg freezing cycle. You might learn something that could surprise you about your own fertility. And so our bodies, like, on the inside, can tell us interesting things if we look to find out. And so I think that sometimes you don't want to know because you're scared of what you might find out, but you will never be as fertile as you are today.
Yeah.
And so just find out, right? It doesn't have to be taboo. You don't have to tell anyone you're going through an egg freezing cycle, but if you do, I think you'll be met with support and excitement and enthusiasm. And if you don't have that in your own orbit, like, seek out an organization like CoFertility, because you will get a member advocate and a group of other people who are going through it at the same time who can support you through it. And the same goes on the intended parent side, right? Like, you will have support and you don't have to go this alone.
Community, the power of community. Yeah.
That's why we call it CoFertility, right?
Is it?
It's one of the
reasons. For community?
Yeah. right? It's like this idea that like together you can achieve your fertility goals, right? Like whether that's one person donating eggs or one person helping, like the intended parent is essentially helping the donor to cover the cost of her egg freezing cycle. And the community, it's like, it totally takes a village on both sides.
Ain't that the truth? Where can people find you, learn more about co-fertility, like learn more about reproductive health, anything? Tell us where to get the goods.
Well, check us out on Instagram, definitely. And me on Instagram, I'd happily engage individually. I'm at Lauren Mackler. But also cofertility.com, right? Like start there. If you're interested in egg freezing, check out, like there's different ways to sort of navigate and see what your options with cofertility might be and what you qualify for. And then if you're interested in using an egg donor, you can meet with a member of our team who can like walk you through the process and help you figure out even like what donor might be right for you. We hope to in any, and actually we had a member once who called it, like she was like, gosh, I get such like big sister vibes from co-fertility. And so now we call it the big sister effect. And it makes me think of my big sister every time, right? Who not only donated eggs to me, but is such a huge like supporter of co-fertility in a million different ways, but is literally the person I go to for everything in my life when I don't know where to start. Right. And that's what co-fertility can be for you in this space.
I love that.
Yeah.
Big sister vibes. I have two big sisters, so like that could make me cry any second now. I love that.
That is so awesome.
Lauren, thank you so much for being on. This was just a joy to talk to you and learn more. And hopefully anyone listening is learning more and feels more empowered about their own journey, whatever that journey might look like.
Exactly. Oh, this was really fun, guys.
If you found something helpful, insightful, or just plain reassuring in this episode, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next one. And if you have a moment, leaving a quick review helps more parents find us.
We're also always looking for great guests, so if you know someone or that someone is you, please reach out. You can find us at whatiwishiknew_ or whatiwishiknew.life.
Thanks for listening. And until next time, stay sane, stay calm, or at least fake it until bedtime.